is brought to you by courtesy of tenure. So when you finally become permanent, you find the craziest thing that you thought about but dare not do, and then suddenly it's like letting myself go to a kid's candy store and say, let's just work on this. So you should look at this. This is preamble for you should look at what I'm doing and look at, you know, like view it as with extreme skepticism. That's the goal. Right? So why do we care about how quantum the cosmological relations is? Well, we know from inflation that the primordial perturbations are quantum, right? There are quantum fluctuations of the vacuum. So the correlations generated are quantum. But you know, our observations are classical. You know, you build Planck, you build WMAP, and use a telescope, and what we got from all our observations are a set of classical probability distribution functions, PDF. So for example, the CMB anisotropies, power spectrum, you know, if you assume that it's Gaussian, then the variance of the Gaussian PDF is labeled by P, labeled by L. It's PL, the expectation value of ALM and ALM star, where the ALMs are just the spherical harmonics of the hot and cold spots. So you can think of this PL, if you like, as just a bunch of Gaussians labeled by L. So now the obvious question to ask, you know, we started off quantum and the things that we see are classical. Is there a way to test for this quantum origins of the perturbations? And again, you know, there are quantum correlations, but what we see is classical PDF. So how much of this primordial quantum information is actually accessible to us? So the classic example of why we care about this question is the two entangled qubits. And you know that two entangled qubits, you know, think of an Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen state, can store two classical bits of information. But if you make separate observations of those qubits, you give one to Alice, you give one to Bob, they make separate observations. The question is, can you reconstruct what the original two classical bits is? But it turns out that you cannot. If you do them separately, you know, one bit of, at most you can recover a bit of information. So the words we say is that, you know, information is lost. So this work sort of like got started because I was talking to this guy, David Tong, who's a professor in Cambridge, and he confessed a nightmare to me. He said like, so maybe the CMB has quantum correlation, you know, some entanglement, containing a message from God, right? But we humanity have recklessly built Planck and make observations in the wrong way and lost the information, right? So he said that, well, maybe, you know, keep me up at night because, you know, maybe we have just screwed up by just going to observe the CMB without actually knowing what we should be observing, right? So this is kind of a joke, but it sort of got me thinking, right? Okay, well, can this actually be the case? But all is not lost, right? Because if a system has quantum correlations, then it doesn't obey classical correlation statistics. We can check. For example, you can do something like Bell's inequality, which tells you that if the progenitor of the thing that you're observing is actually quantum, then some very special set of the classical PDF that you obtain from observing it will have to obey some inequality. And if it doesn't obey it, then it is not, the progenitor state is not quantum. It's not classical, it's actually quantum. And the generalization of the Bell inequality is the so-called CHSH inequality. And roughly speaking, this is like very, it's somewhat technical, but roughly speaking, it says that quantum information cannot be represented by local joint probability distribution function. So one thing, and this is sort of like a thing that I'm gonna throw out right now, is that for those who do quantum information, this is obvious, but people who doesn't might not know, is that entanglement is not the only measure of quantumness. You can actually, things can have be quantum without actually entanglement. So to construct such a statistic, for example, if you want to test whether or not a CMB is actually quantum or not, we need to know what's the nature of the quantum correlations. So this is basically my preamble. And the outline of the talk is the following. So just like some review on how do we tell the difference between the quantum and classical states. And then I'm going to talk about the standard way of people do decoherence in inflation. This is the Starobinsky-Polaski-Kiefer model. And then I'm going to propose that instead of quantum entanglement as a way to test for whether or not the correlations are actually quantum now, I'm going to talk about quantum discord. And then I'm going to model the joint primordial perturbation environment biparticle system. And then using this model, I'm going to just ask this question, how quantum are the perturbations? So this is the outline. And if you don't understand anything I say, just stop me and ask me a question. Thanks. So classical versus quantum state. So classical states, you know, briefly, we can describe them as classical joint probability distribution functions, so joint PDF, of some observable P, X, and P. So if you think of this as a canonical coordinate, canonical momentum, and it obeys this special thing called Einstein locality. you know, Eisner locality is just, you know, if A and B are space-like separate systems, then a complete description of reality, an action on A must not modify a description of B. So this is sort of a technical way to try to hide like all this quantumness when you have entanglement. So if you like, entanglement doesn't obey Einstein locality because an observation of, say, a state here might collapse the wave function of some state there. So it can affect the description. So when we have a classical PDF, say, you know, this here's a phase space for single particle X and P. So this is here's a phase space and here's some green region M. So we want to ask the question, what is the probability of finding a particle in region M? Then what you just do is you integrate over this region, right? So you take the PDF, you integrate over dx dp over the region M, and that's the probability. It's very, you know, straightforward. We know how to do that. When we talk about probability, it just usually means that we're not sure where the particle is. That's why there's a probability, which, you know, equals ambiguity. We're ambiguous where the particle is. And the word that we usually use for ambiguity is just entropy. So if you have a classical PDF, then the way to quantify how ambiguous where the particle is just to calculate this quantity called the Boltzmann-Shannon entropy. H of p equals to minus this integral px of log px. So we know how to do that. So how about quantum states? So quantum states are not described by classical PDF. They're described by density matrices. So in our quantum mechanics class 101, you know, you study a state vector. And state vector, if you want to describe a quantum state by a state vector, usually describe a pure state. But you can mix different pure states and to make some sort of a mixed state. You know, you can take a bunch of these pure states, give it some probability. So pi is just some probability vector, and you say, I'm going to construct this density matrix rho equals the sum of different ui states with some probability pi. And, you know, conservation of probability says that the sum of pi is to be 1. So what we have now described by this density matrix is some mixture of pure states, which is why we call it mixed state. You know, maybe mix it up. Note that there's an additional probability layer pi on top of the usual quantum probability amplitude. So if you like, there's some interaction, interplay between the probability that you put here and the probability amplitude of a standard quantum state. So this makes things really complicated and in a sense much more interesting. If we don't have this, then, you know, we can close shop and just go home. So, okay. So how do we get mixed states? So one way to get mixed state is to start with pure states. And you can evolve into the mixed state under some non-unitary operation in open systems. What does that mean? It means that, okay, let's just start with system S. And then you're gonna, you know, couple this system S with some environment which we have no access to. And then we just keep watching this system S. So if you like, you know, information can leak from system S into the environment. So if you like, the evolution of system S is not unitary because we are losing information into something that we don't see. So if you like, the word we use is that this is a combined biproduct system. If you want to describe the entire system, we use a joint density matrix, rho S of E. But if you only have access to the system S, then the way that we want to describe system S is just to trace over the degrees of freedom in the environment that we don't know. So if you write rho S is just a trace over the environment degrees of freedom of this biproduct density matrix. So this rho S then describes a mixed state because information has been lost from system S to the environment. So now ambiguity, again, you have this notion of probability. Now they're mixed up. It's no longer the Boltzmann entropy, but the sort of von Neumann entropy. And the way that we describe it is just, you know, S of rho S is just the trace over this density matrix. And if it's a pure state, this is zero. Okay, so what about entanglement, right? So I talked a little bit about entanglement just now. So there's a very special way of this, you know, if you have a density matrix and you can write down a density matrix in this particular form, which we call it separable form. And this is kind of complicated, but an easy way to understand is just look at this. This is an example, right? So it is nicely written where the environment states and the system state can be labeled by the same index. And if you can write your density matrix in this following form, we call it separable. And in general, giving any density matrix is not easy to find out. You know, in general, it's not easy to find out whether or not it's separable or not. It's actually a fairly complicated procedure. This example I gave you is easy. So if you have a pure state, separability implies there's no entanglement. And if there's no entanglement, then you actually can describe it by a classical PDF, if it's a pure state. But as I said, mixed states are complicated, right? So mixed state separability means that there's no entanglement, but doesn't mean there's a classical PDF, and I'll tell you why. Okay, so I talk about density matrices, but instead of density matrices, usually people work with this equivalence quasi-PDF picture. It's called a Wigner distribution. And basically, you take the density matrix, you do a wire transform, this very complicated form, to get some PDF, like quasi-PDF like. So you can think of WX of P as some sort of a quantum analog of the probability distribution that you get from the classical PDF. That's the main difference, though. One is that this is doesn't have to be positive definite. And then the other more important difference is how you interpret this thing. In the classical case, you want to ask what's the probability of this thing, of this particle in this region, you just integrate over this region. But in the quantum case, you can't actually do that. You want to ask, let's say you want to ask the question, what's the probability density of x? You have to take this expectation value of x, and this is just the integral over p. So you integrate over minus infinity to infinity, so it's basically a one strip. So this is the integration of infinite strip of p. You can't really just integrate over the area, you have to integrate the entire strip. And this is just because of uncertainty principle. And there's a theorem called the Bertrand-Bertrand theorem that says that, well, it doesn't, here I integrate over p, but in reality that you don't have to integrate p, you just have to integrate over any strip. So you have to integrate this strip or that strip, but it has to be a strip. Right, and the, you know, if you like, this will be the probability density of some operator that will be a linear combination of what x and p is. So that's a major difference in the way we interpret like a Wigner distribution and a classical PDF. And you will come back to that, why this is important for inflation. All right, so now here's the words that usually I use, which is that all states are quantum, right? We are all quantum things. Even though we might look classical, we are really quantum things. We, you know, Schrodinger equation evolved us. But we consider states to be classicals if you can represent this state as classical joint PDF. Right? So if you like, classical states are some subset of all the possible quantum states. So the question, is it quantum? Is it classical? It's kind of easy. Just check the statistics of a state. So okay, so this is my rant. Okay, I'm gonna skip Bell's inequality because we don't have time. Okay, so when we talk about classical and quantum, you always end up have to talk about this thing called decoherence. So I'm gonna like briefly go through it, and then we're gonna apply this to inflation and see why this process matter. Right. So what is decoherence? Well, the first thing you can check is the thing that is not the not is an it, the one thing you can check is whether or not it's actually positive definite, but that's not the best check. The best check, you actually have to calculate the discord, which I'm going to talk about. Okay, so it's a good question. Right? How do you tell? Right? How do you tell is a good question, and I'm going to tell you how do you tell? Right. So okay. So you have coherence. Right. So what do you mean by decoherence? Well, decoherence means there's something called coherence. And coherence is just saying that a quantum phase of some pure state, say a pure state have two possible eigenstates, alpha with a coefficient alpha and beta. Alpha and beta are complex numbers, so they have some. So coherence means that the quantum phase of alpha and beta preserved. So if you take a density matrix of a pure state, so here's rho S, and then you write this down and you get this long thing, which you can write down as a matrix. And you can see that in the off-diagonal term, you have alpha, beta, star, and alpha, star, beta. So this star thing is just the phase, right? So if you like, this density matrix has some complex phase hidden inside. So this phase, if you still know what the phase is, then the state, you say that the state is still coherent. But what happens when you try to decohere it? Okay, decoherent means that you have to couple it to something. Something has to decohere it. So you say you couple S, you know, this state to some environment E. So here's the way that you write it, S tensor product E equals to this thing. And you say, well, there is some couplings. I'm just going to assert there are some couplings that drives this state into this following state. So now you can see that the environment state of zero is coupled to the zero state of the S state of the S system, and the E1 state is beta 1. So if you like, of the one state in the S system. So if you like, E0 and E1 are some state of the environment that we know that we can measure, right? So we measure E0. If it's E0, then we know that the state is in alpha. Basically, this is how decoherence works. But if you only have access to S, say we do not know, have no access to the environment because we don't know anything about it. So you just trace over the environment, as we said. And then if this couplings, if there is some decoherent process, then the off-diagonal terms get driven to zero. And what you get at the end of this decoherent process is just the diagonal term. And the off-diagonal term is zero. So if you like, this process have lost the phase information. You no longer have the B start, and this is beta, and this is beta absolute square, alpha absolute square. There's no, the phase information is lost. If like the final matrix is mixed because you have lost information in the environment, and the phase information is lost. So if you like, the state S has decohered. But I've cheated. I've cheated by saying there's assumption in the way that I describe the coherence is that I have described this coherence occurring in the 0 and 1 basis. If you like, here I've said that you know it decohere in the 0 and 1 basis. But in general, the coherence can occur in any rotated basis. If you like, you can rotate it. I can rotate the 0 and 1 basis of my into some linear combination of 0 and 1. I can decohere in this basis. And the classical PDF obtained from decoherence then depends on you know, which basis you choose to decohere. But the reason I say all these things is because the quantum nature of the cosmological perturbation depends on how you know, the primordial perturbation interact with the environment, the photons and the matter fields and the CMB that we see. And this environment chooses which basis it chooses to decohere and how we measure them. So what the take home point from all these things that I just said is that it's not obvious that we have to choose the basis that the inflationary perturbation has started off with. The environment could pick a different basis.
Excuse me, What is this environment?
Environment is a bit like photons and matter fields. So the process, we observe the CMB. The CMB is photons, and we observe the dark matter distribution. But we say that this photon and dark matter distribution are sourced by the initial quantum fluctuation of the inflaton. So like we use the observation of the CMB to understand what the inflaton or the metric perturbation during inflation is occurring. So if like the perturbations of the inflation is the system, and what we see is the environment. Does that make sense? I'll actually have a nice picture later just to show you how it works. Okay. So now let's talk about inflation, right? So what about inflation? So I'm just going to follow this classic work by Starobinsky and Pulaski and earlier, you know, which followed work earlier work by Grichuk and Sidorov, on how the inflationary perturbation evolved. Do you have a timing? Okay. So the way that they do it is actually very pretty and very easy. So we can take the inflaton field. We choose a gauge, we perturb the inflaton field. The inflaton field is just phi. So let's call delta phi k, the perturbation of the inflaton field, to be yk. Then I can write down the canonical momentum of these things because I can perturb my inflaton field. I can write down the Hamiltonian for the evolution of a single inflaton field. And it just looks like this. So p of k is just the canonical momentum. K squared is the wave factor. And a, oh, this is a, this is there's no A prime here, so this is A. So A prime over A is just, if you like, this is a Hubble parameter. This is expansion of the universe. A is just a scale factor. And prime is the derivative with respect to commoving time. So this is, it's a very simple Hamiltonian that you can write down. So you can write down what is the canonical coordinate and the canonical momentum. So in particular, HK is the unitary evolution operator, right? You know exactly how this mode is going to evolve. There's no losing of information to the environment. You know exactly how it's going to what's going to happen. So you can solve this equation. This is a real distorted equation of the wave function, psi y of eta. I'm just going to drop k here because you know I didn't drop it here, but I'm going to drop k everywhere now. So you can write down the Schrödinger equation. It looks like this. You can find what a solution, what's the wave function of the y as a function of commoving time, and it looks like this very simple form. It's this Gaussian form. So it has some initial coefficient, and it has this term e to the omega r plus I omega I y square, where omega r and omega I describes the background. So given if you plug in different evolutions of the scale factor, you get different omega r. You get different omega r and omega I. Right, so this tells you what the background is. If you plug in for inflationary dissident background, omega r gets driven to e to the minus e to r. Omega I is driven to minus k e to the minus r. So this is how omega r and omega I evolve in the inflationary background at late times. But r, happily, is just the number of e folds. So it's a very, very simple form.
Mm-hmm. Some function of time, and
yep.
You're looking at single mode of the inflaton evolving from
that. That's right. Single mode of the perturbation of the inflaton.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing. Right. So, and it's unitary because I know what my Hamiltonian is. There's no mixing. So, so the mode stays unitary, stays pure all the way. Right. So now you might have heard, some of you might have read something about cosmological squeeze states, right? So what is that? So what happened with this state after you evolve it through inflation? So here's what happened, right? So again, now we are doing doing quantum information. So instead of thinking about the state vector, we think about the density matrix. So I can write down what the density matrix of this inflaton perturbation is. It's just that, and it looks something complicated like this. And here I have make. I'll tell you a little bit about it later. So it looks like this, and as omega r over k e to the minus 2r. I just say this describe the dynamics of the background. As r increase, as the number of e folds increases, what happens is this guy gets driven to much less than 1. If you look at this equation here, the off diagonal term here gets killed off. If you like, the density matrix become a very, very diagonal density matrix. The off-diagonal terms just get driven to 0 by the dynamics of the background. So far, this is all unitary evolution. There's no decoherence. So the state is still pure, even though you have done this crazy stuff. So one thing that I want to make a comment on, sort of tangential comment, is that here I have secretly chosen y. I've just taken the real component of y. I haven't taken the complex component of y. In principle, y is a complex number. And if you think about inflationary perturbations, there should be actually some entanglement between the plus k and the minus k state. Because they are like kind of Hawking radiation. So by taking the real part only, I've only chosen to follow one of the states. Right? So if you want to do this in general, you actually have to worry about a complex part and worry about entanglement between the positive and the negative k states. But here I'm not going to do that. I think that the any entanglement will be third order, but I haven't actually written it down in general. So don't quote me on that.
Does this mean that you're kind of only following the Brian mode or something?
Sorry?
Does this mean that you're only following the Brian mode?
So far I'm following every mode, everything. When you drop this, this becomes it becomes only a growing mode. Exactly. So for who doesn't know, every inflationary mode has a growing mode and a decaying mode. And if you like, what this effectively do is that the decaying modes get driven to very, very small number. And remember, when we talk about coherence of phase, coherence of a state, well, if you have a growing mode and a decaying mode, each of them can carry a phase. And the fact that the decaying mode is driven to zero means that it carries the phase information away with it. So if you like, this looks very, very decohered, quote unquote, even though it doesn't interact with the environment. Does that make sense? Okay. So although I said there's no decoherent, it just looks very, very classical.
I think that the plus K and minus K modes are maximally entangled even at lowest orders. That's why if there was just linear theory, the density perturbations would always be in a standing wave state, or the gravitational waves would always be in a standing wave. You'd never get a traveling wave. That's coming from the fact that the phases of the amplitudes and the phases of the two opposite k's are pinned to each other. But like you said, it's just like an Hawking
radio. I'm sympathetic to what you said. Actually, this is what Lamhui argued too. And I'm not quite sure. I sat down and tried to actually write down that initially maximum entangled state. I can't really write it down. I do not know how to write it down. So my suspicion that's actually is only at third order. But as I have my weasel words and my disclaimer said, I don't know the exact answer. So maybe we can talk about it later. So I see what you're saying, right? If you like, the vacuum state of Kn minus K should be maximum entangled. But I don't know how to write it down.
You've removed the k's there, but wasn't your initial amplitude for a space? It wasn't y sub k coupled to y sub k. It's always y sub k coupled to y sub minus k.
Yes.
So that it's just always any time that Hamiltonian creates a k mode, it always creates a minus k.
Yeah, I mean if I just say okay, psi has minus k and plus k. So if you want to write this now as a matrix, it'll be like 4 by 4 matrix instead of 2 by 2 matrix. So the growing mode of the minus k might be entangled with the decaying mode of the k mode. But I actually tried to do that. I'm not quite sure how I should write it down. So I want to defer that question. Maybe we can talk later. I actually want to know the answer to it, because if there's actually entanglement, like serious maximum entanglement, maximally entanglement between minus k and k, actually give it a lot more hope about what you're going to hear later. Yeah, but if I try to write it down as say, okay, if I want to write down a generic entangled state, right? So a state that's generically entangled would look something like this. So if I have two states, right? So it would be Cij and Inj over say the number over n, say this is the k mode, and ni this is minus k mode, right? So this would be something like that. Right, so then we say that this the state will be entangled between Ni and Nj. But if both of them start in the vacuum, Ni and Nj is zero. So I do not know how to express this in terms of this, and you'll be just a pure state. So I do not know how to entangle between two vacuum states. So I do not know how to translate this language to that language.
So that's why I'm
not quite sure how to actually express this. So if you want to start interacting between these two, then you have to think about interaction between k and minus k. And then we know that in linear theory, they don't interact. But in third order, they will interact, which is the source of my statement saying that I think the entanglement will be third order. But again, you know, I'm just talking out of my ass right now.
What if one could conceive of some other mechanism?
Oh, true. To do
omega r would not be zero,
small. You mean omega r?
Yeah.
Sorry, you're saying that there's some other mechanism than inflation that drive omega. I think, as we have a conversation previously yesterday night, I think that one possibility could be instead of inflating is collapsing universe. So what the ultimate thing of if you want to drive on terms to be a diagonal term is that. Again, you start with growing mode and decaying mode. If one of the terms, either the growing mode or decaying mode, given some background, one of them gets driven to very, 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 very small number, you're going to get this kind of diagonalization.
Such a mechanism, you wouldn't lose the phase information. Because the omega r would not be small.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that if omega r is not small, yes, if you don't have, if your dynamics are the background, do not drive omega r to be a small number, then you won't lose the phase information.
What
that's right.
What does that mean?
It means that the state that if you are a very rich funding agency, you can find an experiment that go and try to look for interference effect of this psi field because you have the phase information still there.
You won't lose
the phase information. Yeah, you won't. Yeah, exactly. But unfortunately, you know, we live in a world where inflation works, though.
Well. That's not necessarily true.
Yes. All right. Well, I mean, I like your spirit. You know, like, I don't believe in inflation. So anyway.
So isn't it just that it's zero sub k tensor zero sub minus k and plus some non-zero thing times one sub k one sub minus k and then plus some non-zero thing two sub minus k.
Right. That's the Cij, right? Yeah. Huh?
Yeah. So Cij is the diagonal matrix. So then that state is entangled.
That state is entangled. But right, but if you start with the both of them start with vacuum, then Ni is zero and Nj and N is zero, Ni is zero and N1 is non is Ni is not zero and if you like C00 is non zero and C01 will be zero because there's no one particle minus k state. So this is entangled. This is the way I write it down generally. This is entangled. But in the initial vacuum state, the way that we understand quantum fluctuation, at least I understand quantum fluctuation, that all of them start in the vacuum, right? So C00 is non-zero, and C01 is zero, C11 is zero, C12 is zero. That's the initial state.
I think that's because you're saying the initial state is a pure state, so how would you end up with an entangled state? Isn't it just if you just focus on one k mode,
we can talk a little bit. I guess what maybe trying to answer is that we, in a sense, that if we follow the standard fluctuation theory that we read from Mukhanov, then all the n i's are zero, right? So there's no, so how do we write down a state to this entangle? The one that I would like to write down is that maybe C00 is non-zero, C01 is not zero, C10 is not zero, C11 is not zero, C11 is not zero, and everything else zero. Then you have some sort of entanglement between the vacuum state and the first excited state.
Isn't the one way of writing it is the where you've written it in the Fock basis according to the observer at early times?
Yes.
And then the other way of writing it.
Yes. Yes. I think
so
that would
way,
be.
Either way, it's a pure state. But if you write it in the Fock basis of the guy at early times, it looks like non-entangled state, which is zero.
I think that would be the right prescription to do it. So one way, because we know that Hawking radiation occurs because of sort of like the basis changes, right? So if you like, if we write down the standard inflationary perturbation, we start with a vacuum, but we know that the vacuum doesn't stay the vacuum because of interactions. But we also know that vacuum changes, you know, using the in formalism, it's at third order because the interaction Hamiltonian occurs at the third order term. So that's why I say that maybe the entanglement would be at third order.
Yeah. I think that is what happens. But if you do it in the Fock basis, the early guy is not entangled. If you do it in our Fock basis,
yeah, exactly. So I think that's the right prescription of doing it. But I mean, I haven't actually written it down how to evolve it. Okay, sorry for the long detour. So what is the Wigner distribution for this thing after the off diagonal terms has been killed off? So it basically looks like Gaussian with ellipsoidal axis. So this is the Wigner distribution. And you know this the long axis is e to the r, which is a very big number, and the short axis is e to the minus r. So the distribution is, we call it a squeezed. It's super squeezed actually, because r is 60, it's a big number. And then this it's a Gaussian state because it can write down WXB in this form, and it looks like a Gaussian form. Right? So this is a super squeezed state. So what happened when you make observation of this state? So what happened, again, you know, you calculate the expectation value of some observable. Remember that we have to integrate over the axis. So let's integrate over this axis. And you can see that since this is a Gaussian, this looks like a Gaussian, right? You know, if you can look at the third dimension, the thing that's popping out of the screen is a Gaussian. So we observe this thing and we see a Gaussian, right? So if you like, classical measurements of this thing always give you a Gaussian. And you can integrate this way or integrate that way, you still get a Gaussian, which is why we see a Gaussian state. Our distribution of the CND, if you like, is Gaussian. Okay, so now to come back to your to tell you a picture, right? Now a lot of words, a lot of equations. So what's going on here? So what I'm going to say is that we don't actually see the perturbation. We actually see photons and matter distribution, right? So if you like, the environment, you know, matter, stuff like us, is actually a quantum channel. So you start with some vacuum state, the Bench Davis vacuum state, the rule of S. And then, you know, unitary evolution during inflation squeeze it, so you get this state which is super squeezed. But we observe the environment, right? So photons and matter, and so you have this little fan-like thing. This is, you know, tells you that this is the environment that we actually observe. So if we're like primordial states coupled to the environment decohere them because they couple. We know that decoherence happens when you couple it to the environment. And then us. We build Planck, and then we only see a subset of this environment. We don't see the whole universe. We only see a small slice. So we just see all these slices. And the slice that we see, I'm going to call rho SE. And since this slice can leak information back into the other part of the environment we don't see, this thing is actually mixed. We lose information even after it interacts with the squeeze state. So so the overlap between this thing that we see and the primordial state is the neutral information. This is the how much information we can learn about primordial state S given measurements of E, which we see. Right. So now we want to know what I S E is. So to break down the problem that we have now is like basically what we want to know. What we want to know is how quantum this rho S E is. We know that rho S is super classical, but it decoheres. It interacts with the environment, so maybe you can restore some quantumness into the thing. So here's what we want to know is what is the quantum structure of rho SE. And then we also want to know how much information we can learn about S from observations of the environment. So we want to know these two things. So how do we do it? So to do it, we need to do the following things, right? At least as theorists, you know, if you have lots of money, then you can build an experiment. But now we do theory, right? So we have to figure out how to construct rho SE. We need to somehow model the coherence of the interaction between the primordial state and the environment. And we want to find out, if you want to ask the question, how quantum is rho SE, we want to find some good measure of the quantumness of rho SE. And finally, you want to calculate this quantity, I of S. You want to calculate how much information we can learn from the primordial, about the primordial state given observation of the environment. Right, so this is kind of like our roadmap.
Are you taking the environment here to be field bindings outside our Hubble bundle?
No, I'm just saying environment as photon stuff that have become classical, things that, you know, like you, for example. So they are just like photons, or the CMB observation is what we call environment. And planets, things that we can interact with our instruments. Because we don't actually interact with the implanton directly, we interact with things that have interacted with the photon, with the implanton field. Okay, so, all right, so I'm gonna follow, I mean, this is not exactly the only way to do it, there are many ways to do it, and I'll talk about it just a little bit later. But one way that Starobinsky, Kiefer, and Polarski proposed in 1998 is how to model decoherence, right? It's following this, you know, classic paper by Jus and Zer. They say, well, environment scatters off the primordial state a large number of times, which is completely reasonable. Because, you know, we have a primordial state, but it scatters off many, many photons touch it. So you scatter, you can calculate then what is the density matrix given this assumption that the environment does interact with the primordial state a large number of times. And what they get after doing all this calculation is that they say, well, the density matrix of the primordial state get an extra term called this is the original primordial state times this extra term where zeta, which assumed to be much bigger than omega r, is, if you like, the decoherence parameter. So if you like, the environment decohere the primordial state in this following way. So this is kind of like the ansatz. I mean, that's a long derivation of it, but really, if you look at it very carefully, it's an ansatz, right? So this is the ansatz they use. And it's a diagonal, it's also a diagonal state. But now you have interacted with the environment, rho s is no longer pure, it becomes mixed. It's still a Gaussian because it still looks like a Gaussian, but the axis of the state has now become fat, right? So the length of the Gaussian is still e to the r, but now the width is no longer e to the minus r, it becomes zeta, so if you like, the squeezing is fattened. This is one way of doing it. There are other ways of modeling the coherence. One way to do it is to use the high-frequency modes as the environment, high-frequency and photon modes and the environment, and you couple with the low-frequency observed modes. And then you can try to do some sort of decoherent process. So this is done in detail with a hell of a guy, you know, Cliff Burgess. Have you been to his webpage? He's a hell of a guy, you know, that's what he said. And Cliff actually is a very good expert in it. So, but we're gonna follow Starobinsky, Polarski, and Kiefer, which is gonna be called SBK. Right, so we have this Gaussian answer. So you can write down now the density matrix in the Wigner picture as a Gaussian form with a covariant matrix sigma s to the minus one, where sigma s is a function of omega I, and the decoherence parameter. Now, the next step is that, well, we have this trace over state. Can we find a joint density matrix rho se such that the trace over the environment of this rho se gives you this rho s prime? So now we know what rho s prime is, but we want to know what rho se is, right? So can we do that? It turns out it's actually not unique, because you lose information when you trace over. So this rho se state is not unique. And it's also continuous, because we're talking about, you know, lots of states. So this is actually fairly hard to do. And one way to move forward, to try to calculate what this rho se is, to assume that rho se is also a Gaussian state. Okay, so now I'm going to, this is assumption. I'm not quite sure how to justify it. So I'm just going to, you know, summon Obi-Wan Kenobi and say that these are not the droids you're looking for. So, well, I mean, actually, it's not actually that bad. We can assume that, you know, because we have lots of states, so central limit theorem argues that at least the joint state should be also be some sort of a Gaussian because we have lots of modes, right? So what else can you expect it to be? But I actually don't have a very strong analytic argument why this has to be a Gaussian. I'm just going to call it a Gaussian because this is one thing that I can know how to calculate.
Once you stretch the wavelengths of the time of quantum fluctuation with inflation, which is one of the reasons for having inflation, you stretch it out to the CMB, mm-hmm. then they get frozen in mm-hmm. as classical things. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand where zeta, it seems to be, what happens during inflation? Because doesn't zeta get in the way of?
No, zeta doesn't happen in inflation. Zeta is a parameter that says that we have inflaton field, as you say, stretched over super horizon scales. And then what we see is photons.
Right.
right? So the environment has lots of photons. The photons get scattered off this perturbations of the metric. So for each cold spot in hotspot, not only we don't observe just one photon, right? For we observe many photons. The instrument pointed and all our photons comes in and we collect statistics of these photons. So the idea is that for each mode, each perturbation mode, you require a lot of interaction with the environment, many photons. So if you want to see whether or not there's a cold spot or hot spot, you need to see lots of photons. And the way that they do it is to sort of like parameterize how much of this process of decoherence using this parameter zeta.
So you put this into not so you don't lose quantum information.
You will lose quantum information, actually.
You still
lose quantum information because it becomes mixed. And in fact, I can quantify exactly how much you lose given that. I'll tell you. Okay? So it turns out that if you assume that it's a Gaussian, you can actually construct a unique pure two-mode Gaussian state. So I'm very proud that I can figure out how to do this. So if you like, give me a single mode Gaussian state, I can construct a Gaussian purification of rho s. In other words, I can construct this state, this two mode, if you like, the two mode means there are y and p, y1 and p1, y2 and p2. Wigner distribution now, which is four dimensional, it looks something like this with rho s e instead of rho s, such that if I trace over this thing, I actually get rho s. It's kind of cool, right? So, and then once I know what's the pure rho SE, I can just parameterize around this Gaussian state to get a mixed Gaussian state. So that's how I'm going to construct a joint rho SE state that is mixed and it's also Gaussian so that we can make progress. So there are many possibilities of parameterization because, you know, it's a 4x4 matrix. And we're going to choose a two-parameter model because this is all I can do is to illustrate the basis dependent on Discord. I haven't told you about Discord yet, but this just tells you that the coherent can pick different bases, and I'm going to choose a way to parameterize this decoherent basis. So it looks something like this, and it's kind of complicated. So the rho SE now looks like this instead of something very simple, and it's a two-parameter model, beta and tau. I impose that beta is more than one. You don't have to worry about these things. Just that this is some parameter of the model, and beta and tau equals to one is a pure state. And this is not all possibilities, not all covariant matrices are actually physical states. So there are conditions on the physicality of the state. Here's it, you don't have to worry too much about it. And you also, the state is also entangled when this C term is just a rewriting of the decoherence parameters, something called C. So SPK decoherence always entangle the state. If you believe in this Starobinsky, Pulaski, Kiefer decoherence process, rho SE, the joint perturbation environment state, always entangled. It's always entangled. So if you like, let's hope you may see some entanglement on the CMB. Right? So if only if you believe in this thing, okay, you don't have to believe this thing, but this is the best we have right now. So as I was saying, SPK answers always generate entanglement with the environment. Okay, so this is some technical stuff. So now we have modeled the joint states. Now the next question is that what's a good measure of quantumness? Well, the joint perturbation environment state, rho SE, is a mixed state. So as I said early on, if it's a mixed state, entanglement measures are insufficient. In fact, if it's a mixed state, there's no unique definition of what is entanglement is. There's entanglement of entropy, entanglement of formation, negativity, purity, a bunch of them that people come up with trying to quantify what entanglement of a mixed state is. You know, it's actually quite an open problem. What is the right entanglement measure? So what I'm going to propose is that the more robust measure is quantum discord, right? Which captures quantumness beyond entanglement from mixed state. And this is proposed by Olivier and Zurek and Henderson Vidra in 2001. So if you are a quantum information theory, this is like the bandwagon. This is like one of the hottest thing right now. I always joke that this is like the non-Gaussianity of quantum information. Everybody write papers on it. I put on my hand, I write papers on non-Gaussianity. So this is like kind of hot stuff. So what is that? So the idea is actually very, very simple. So I'm going to follow how Olivier and Zurek write it down, because I think it's easier to understand. So if I have two classical states, A and B, and they overlap, so we can figure out, we can ask, well, A and B are correlated, So that if we met, we learn something about A, we would know something of, we learn something about B, then we learn somebody, we, then we know something about A because you know they are correlated. So the way to quantify this knowledge of A when we know B is to write this thing called classical mutual information down. It's just J A colon B and just the Shannon entropy minus conditional Shannon entropy of A known B. So this is classical states. It's a classical PDF. You can do Bayes' theorem on it. So I can write down the conditional probability in this way. And then I take this, I plug it back into this equation. I get this new expression, which is no longer have a conditional probability here, but this is some the marginalized probability of B, and some and the Shannon entropy of A and B together. And since this is classical, J and I is completely equivalent. If you take I, you subtract J, you get zero. Right. So if you take I, okay. So, but you can now ask, well, okay, what about a quantum generalization? So the obvious thing to generalize when you want to generalize a classical information notion to quantum, you replace the Shannon entropy H with the von Neumann entropy. As I said, this measured ambiguity of the state. So H you replace with S. So now IAB become I scripted IAB and SA plus SB minus SAB. This is completely okay. We know exactly what this is. But what about J? J become SA minus SA condition B. But what do you mean by conditional probability in quantum mechanics? It's not clear what this is. And it's obvious it's not clear. It's not as obvious as you think. Because in quantum mechanics, finding out me, which means that you make measurements on B, but quantum mechanically, this might affect A because they are correlated. Right? So it is not clear how to what this is. You have to define a notion of what you mean by conditional probability in quantum mechanics. And then so Olivier and Zurak propose the following. He say, given some choice of basis of measurements, this is just technical word, POVM, don't worry too much about it, on B. So here's some set of measurements, pi B labeled by K, so a bunch of measurements on K. So each pi K measurement occurs with probability PK. So you make a measurement on the state, you get some probability PK. So once you make a measurement, rho AB become this thing. And then the conditional state, rho A given B, knowing B is equal to this state, is given to you by this thing, you know, whatever the post-measurement state is, trace over B, because we have lost information on we only have access to A. Right? So this, you know, this is just, don't worry too much about it, it's just technical. So we can now define the conditional probability of A knowing B to be some set of states to be equal to the probability times the Neumann entropy of this resulting state rho A given B. Right, so we just define it this way. It's just the way that he constructed it. And now you can define what quantum, what this difference between I and J is. So now J depends on what the measurement basis. You have to choose some basis of a measurement. So it now depends, it is a basis dependent quantity. And the difference between I and J classically is zero, but quantum mechanically is no longer zero and it depends on what pi B of K is. And this thing delta is called quantum discord. Right, the idea is that if it's a classical state, then this statistics of A and B can be represented by classical PDF, then I minus J is zero. So if discord is zero, then it's a classical state. If discord is non-zero, then it's not a classical state. You can show that it's always positive definite. Right, so that's the idea to answer the question just now. How do you tell is a classical state or not? Well, you calculate a discord.
Since it's basis dependent, I guess there's a certain set of measurements that would maximize the difference?
Yep, I'll show you the next, yep, exactly. So now here's how crazy the basis dependent is, right? So if that's a simple example, which is, let's just say, a simple two-qubit system, so rho AB is this thing, plus something parameterized by Z over 2, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0. So this is some generic state parameterized by Z, where Z is some number going from 0 to 1. Notice if z equals to zero, you drop this red term, and what you get is that the B state is aligned with A's pointer basis. What that means is if I observe zero in B, I know that the state of A is also zero. If I observe state of one in B, then I know that the state of A is also one. But if I have z is not equal to zero, it's not clear. You get some linear combination of zero and one when you make observation on B. So now we can parameterize the measurement basis of B to be not just 0 and 1, but some rotated basis. So they are now parameterized by theta. And now we can just take this and calculate what the discord of this thing is. And here's the answer. Right, so if you look at this plot here, z is 0 here and 1 over there. And 0, the theta, the angle of your measurement basis is 0 here. And you can see that this discord only occurs when z equals to 0 and theta equals to 0. So the only time when you actually have a classical distribution is when this point is. And notice that even when z equals to 0, even though this thing is completely unambiguous, if you measure in the 1 and 0 basis, if you measure in the wrong, not a 0 and 1 basis, but some rotated basis, you actually get some quantumness left. So measurement basis is important. And so in our language, when we talk about decoherence is a way that you pick up a measurement basis. So the way that decoherence occurs in inflation actually matters. Right? This is my point. So, okay. So some facts on discord just to get you all excited. You know, so if this zero discord is zero, means decoherence occurs in the pointer basis, there's no entanglement, you can call this state a classical state. So a mixed separable states can have non-zero discord. This is another way of saying that no entanglement doesn't mean no quantum correlation, especially in mixed state. Right? So entanglement is not enough. And discord is basis dependent. Now people actually work on basis independent discord by integrating over all the possible configuration, but we don't do that. So what got people excited about discord is that you can show that a particular quantum circuit with discord, but zero entanglement is actually better than a classical circuit in computing, the trace of a unitary matrix. So if you like, maybe quantum computation has some use for discord.
Can I just ask about the harmonic oscillator in the ground state, mm-hmm. So the Wigner function is just a Gaussian in that case. Mm-hmm. It seems like I can get no quantum discord.
But discord needs a bipartite state, so if you have a single state union.
Between X, so I can't think of it in between X and B.
No, that's the single state, right? Okay.
Can I just ask you, so no entanglement does not imply no quantum correlation. Does no discord imply no quantum correlation?
Yes.
It's classical. You explain that not quantum implies no discord, but the converse is also true.
I didn't quite. Okay. If quantum discord is zero, then the PDF, the state can be described as classical PDF. That's the thing. So then the way that we define a classical state is something that is described by a classical PDF, which obeys Einstein locality. Okay, so now we can calculate cosmological discord, right? So remember the picture that I say that we have environment, the photons of matter, and then you have perturbation, delta phi. So what is discord for that? I have constructed what rho s is, I know what my joint state is, I can calculate all these things. And again, discord depends on what the basis of the coherence picked up by the environment. So again, what do you choose by, what is this, right? So there are many ways the environment can pick up a basis. Again, I'm gonna choose Gaussian basis because this is something I know how to calculate. Anything else I don't know how to calculate. So I'm just gonna choose something I know how to calculate. It's not that particularly controversial either, because all the things that we see is Gaussian. So why not a Gaussian state? So again, it's parameterized by the alignment, the theta, the alignment of the Gaussian with respect to the squeeze state. So it depends on theta and how squeezed the measurement themselves is, gamma. So gamma is 10 to the minus 5 because that's how we see the perturbation is 10 to the minus 5. So gamma is a squeezing and theta is alignment of the Gaussian with respect to the environment. So the environment is that choose what this is to decohere to, and then we make measurements. So you can see what the answer is. Right? So if it's pure state, if for example rho SE is a pure state, beta equals 1, then it turns out that the discord of a pure state is actually equals to entanglement entropy. I can calculate that. And this actually been calculated by a completely different way by Kiefer, Staromyski, and Pulaski, and I got the same answer, so I was very happy. But this is not an unrealistic state because it means that we have access to the entire universe. We don't. We only have access to a slice of the environment. So we shouldn't be calculating the discord for a pure state. We should be calculating the discord for a mixed state. So here's the discord for a mixed state. Here's the answer. So I can plug into Mathematica and I can calculate that is. And so gamma is 10 to the minus 5 just tells you that I'm choosing a state where the measurement is always about 10 to the minus 5 in the squeezeness, which is what we see in the CMB, the perturbation is about 10 to the minus 5. So, and then depending on the alignment of the measurement basis with the pointer basis of the perturbations, you get a very, very different discord given beta and t, which this beta and tau just tells you how mixed the state is. So I'm actually running out of time, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. But the point I want to point out is that, one, you can see the structure is very different. That's a maximum. So if like this white area is there because states are not physical in this white area. So if you're like at the back of this little cliff here, it's also a white area. So the discord is maximum at the region when the state is actually physically possible. So and the point is then the quantumness of the cosmological correlations depend on the decoherent basis. Now if you ask me what is my guess of where the alignment angle is, I'll choose this. I'll choose that, you know, we actually measure in the pointer basis. So this is what I choose. But you know, I'm just saying that you can actually possibly decohere in a different basis. So finally, you know, with three minutes left, I'm going to answer the last question. So how much primordial information is actually accessible? I said that this is what we want to calculate, right? The quantum neutral information, how correlated S and E is, or how much we know about S given knowledge of E. So it turns out that you actually can write down a conservation equation of the following form. So the quantum neutral information is actually a quantum discord plus some quantity called holographic information. So for those who do information theory, they will know what this is. But for those who doesn't, what this thing is that given a quantum channel, it tells you what's the upper bound of classical information given to you by this vector, probability vector P of K, that can be transmitted by a quantum channel constructed out of a POVM of rho S pi of EK. So a lot of words, a lot kind of complicated. But briefly speaking, this is saying this. So if I have, if in words, this is what this equation tells you. The environment chooses a decoherent basis. So pi of K is chosen by the environment. And this prepares the primordial state at this state. If you're somebody who is watching S and you do not know what S is, it will look something like this. This is what, once you choose a measurement basis, this is what the primordial state looks like. And X basically quantifies how much classical information we can extract from this thing. So if you like to, so this is how much information, maximum information that we can get classically out of a quantum channel of S that is where it's chosen once a decoherent basis has been picked. So if you like, if you want to measure our accessibility to the primordial information, we need to minimize discord. The discords also measure the lost primordial information. The less discord, the better. Okay, so this is kind of like the end of my talk. So here's a summary. So unitary evolution inflation drives primordial perturbation in the classicality. This is bad. You know, we hate this, but you know, damn the brakes. But primordial perturbation entangle with the environment to cohere. So you can observe the environment observe the environment to infer what the primordial perturbations are. But this decoherent process actually restores the quantumness of the primordial perturbations, ironically. So it may allow for some sort of Bell's inequality type test on this joint state. But of course, we are not really probing the quantum origin of the primordial state. We are probing the decoherent process. So it's a different question now, even if you can do this. And finally, you know, the state is mixed, so a robust measure of non-classicality is actually quantum discord, and it depends on basis. So here's the end of my talk. Thanks for listening.
So can you give a physical picture of what it means to have the pointer basis aligned with the basis that the decoherence chooses? Is this some statement about the correlated wavelengths of the quantum perturbation and the classical things, or is in the environment? Can you just give me?
I think the way that I would think about it is that so if you like the perturbations, the y and the phi delta phi state is, you know, we measure delta phi. What's that? Delta phi is the amplitude of the fluctuation in the position basis of x, right? So and then if we make measurement, let's just say that we have environment and we can pick a measurement. We pick that the photons only depends on the position. Then I would say that the amplitude or the intensity of the photon is aligned with the primordial basis. But let's just say that the photon doesn't just interact in the position basis, right? So interact maybe with the delta phi dot. So now he interact with the p basis. So maybe the photon doesn't just probe x, it also probe p. So then it would be misaligned.
If the classical thing is the
quantum
breaks down, doesn't it undermine our even the framework to contrast perturbation around the classical background, because maybe already have assumed the background is classical and then perturbs it, and that's somehow the largest perturbation.
But this is kind of like what I would try. I mean, this is like the, okay, I'm sort of like dress it up in some exciting thing, but kind of the sad thing is that we can't really probe the quantum origins of the primordial perturbations. Any quantumness that we probe is actually a part of the decoherent process. Now we can always turn the question around and say that, well, this is everything I've done is assuming quantum mechanics worked, right? This is all just consequences of quantum mechanics and cosmological perturbation theory. But maybe you can ask the question, well, maybe we can make predictions using this formalism, and then you go and measure those things, and it turns out to be completely crazy, not what we see, then maybe this is a test of quantum mechanics.
So, I want to say it's a test of decoherence procedure. So what I'm saying is that when we start doing the quantization, we already separate finite into the homogeneous part and the inhomogeneous part. And the homogeneous part, we have assumed it has already been classical.
Yep.
So it's only the smaller scale that start being quantized. So as the inflation happens and moves exit the horizon, if they don't become classicalized, then that would mean the background is starting.
I see. So you're saying that what is the story if your background is actually not assumed to be classical?
Exactly.
I actually don't know. I don't know the answer to that. In fact, a good question is why do we assume that the background is classical, right? So I actually don't know the answer to that.
I think it's consistent. After the mode exists, the horizon will become classical. Then I can buy the story is a consistent story.
Right.
But everything that becomes a larger scale homogeneous.
But I think the point is, though, that the words we say when the modes become super long wavelength mode, so super horizon, become classical, is, you know, what do you mean by that, right? I mean, here we explicitly show that it actually become a very squeezed state. Instead, a squeezed state is not really classical, it's still a quantum state. It's just that our measurement actually only picks up the squeezing. We don't actually pick up, you know, the tangential state.
I think he's ending your paper. We had to start around thinking about this. Do you have any idea what constructing like this Discord means in terms of like what do I do with a bunch of CLs to make
bouncing across? I don't know. I mean, I like to know the answer to that. I think we know that the construction.
Presumably, there the 2-point function because you've only assumed like Gaussian.
Yeah, 3-point function is not enough. Actually,
so you just start with the 2 points and take some, you know.
I don't think point functions enough. The reason that all the endpoint functions are all functions of the position. So to construct some sort of Bell's inequality test, you need spine observables that doesn't commute with position. So all the point functions is not enough. But one thing we were talking about last night during dinner is could be isocurvature modes. So if you like phi dot mode that evolve outside the horizon. So phi dot is the conjugate of P, so maybe we need a handle on what the eigenvalues of P, not just X. So all the endpoint functions are eigenvalues of X, so we can't really use that. So you need something a little bit more sophisticated.
You need about 60 e-folds to make inflation work.
Mm-hmm.
So e to the minus 60 is a very small number.
Yes.
So it's possible that the unitary evolution kills quantum information so much the coupling to the environment will not save you. This is what I would suspect. Which comes first?
I'm sympathetic to what you say, but I don't know the real true answer to that. I can see what you're saying is that, you know, but remember that the information you got killed by the squeezing is the phase information.
It's zero.
It's the phase information of the growing and the decaying mode of the fluctuations. Right. So but we know that quantum information is more than just phase information. You can have entanglement. And entanglement doesn't get killed by this inflationary squeezing of the state. So there's still, if you like, there's still possibility. I'm not quite sure the exact form. The way that I model it, if I assume that the SPK decoherence work, the joint state actually is entangled. mean, generically, it's always entangled. So that is still entanglement to go and look for. But it's not a primordial entanglement, it's the, you know, it's the decoherence process entanglement.
You have to have some way of measuring.
Yeah, I mean, this, I think that's the answer to his question. I mean, how do we test for the entanglement? How do we test that the progenitor is entangled? You do some sort of Bell's inequality test. But it's also hard because you need to access the observable, not just position. You need access the observable of the momentum. So, and I do not know what is the actual observable that measure P.
More questions for you, Jane? Let's take one more time.